Social News Scientific News Artistic News With Delight
Local fishermen have rescued an injured baby manatee on a bay in far southeastern Cuba. The fishermen are nursing the injured baby manatee with cow and goat milk mixed with coconut water. They discovered the injured manatee with gashes on his head and body in Maria del Portillo Bay near Havana. Upon arrival on shore, the fishermen recruited volunteers for a nearby farming village.
We were fishing along the shore when we saw the manatee coming. When it approached us, we realized it was injured. It had several wounds on its body, one on the head and two on the rest of the body. Between the two of us, we made the decision to take her to the port of Maria del Portillo, where the boats were moored. When we got there, the whole town was very surprised. Some people ran to help us, others ran to get milk. Seeing that it was small and knowing that it's a mammal, we decided to give it some milk. The people who have cows gave us cow's milk. Those who have goats gave us goat's milk.
Manatees are aquatic mammals akin to giant water-borne cow. The mammal is found in sheltered bays and estuaries throughout Cuba. Scientists say coastal communities could play a key role in protecting marine species and their habitats. Races, beauty contests, and a marvelous show. Here is everything you need to know about the first Qatar Camel Festival. Qatar kicked off its very first edition of the Camel Festival earlier this month at Lepsair, Doha. The festival features unique and high-value breeds for the public to enjoy. Camels from all around the region will also get to flaunt their posture to earn the title of the most beautiful camel or the highest value breed in the festival. But first, the whole lot should be judged.
Judging is based on the size of the camel's head, the length of the neck and the beautiful appearance of the animal and its health status. Of course, judging is different for each group of camels. For example, in the case of camels that are black, the focus is on the size of the animal's head. But on camels that are white, the focus is on the beauty of the camel and the harmony of the body and the beauty of the animal. In addition, we have very experienced professional staff who will deal with the animal if it is artificially beautified.
To spike excitement and competitiveness in those who enjoy such shows, the country has allocated a whopping 47 million Qatari riyals for the lucky winners. The 45-day event will last until March 22nd and will include various competitions, including 115 local and international races.
In the streets of the Chadian capital city, an actor is bringing culture to impoverished neighborhoods by organizing readings of poetry and plays.
Culture should be accessible to all. If we want to have a wonderful world, a harmonious world, everyone should be focused on the same dimensions to be able to dream together. And without culture, we don't be able to initiate development. And to initiate this stage of development, we need to invite people to think together.
The actor does not have a fixed place to tell his stories. He performs in public spaces and says it is his way of giving everyone the opportunity to discover and explore creativity. Among the activities Bonaventure organizes, one can name drawing with children and conducting acting classes. He believes music and theater bring other disciplines together, creating an avenue for enriching human connections. Residents, especially the children of the impoverished neighborhood, say they always look forward to Bonaventure's arrival. A first-of-its-kind selfie museum in the Central American country of Guatemala is gaining lots of attention from excited enthusiasts. The selfie museum is located in Antigua, Guatemala, and is made up of 40 rooms or scenarios. Each room is a recreation of a colorful theme. Wallpaper, wings, greenery, neon signs, and other props are all present to spark the interest of visitors. One room includes a levitating bed, and another is equipped with a spaceship. Other rooms have familiar scenarios of presidential offices and comic book characters for visitors to take photographs in. Several artists participated in creating the art illustrations. A zoo in Peru's capital city, Lima, is celebrating a rare hatching of endangered baby crocodiles. The Huachipa Zoo showcased three females and one male to the public on the World Wildlife Day. The four crocodiles were born in incubators as part of the conservation efforts for the reptile. This species is an American crocodile, which is on the endangered list of animals in Peru. Zookeepers say the black market and threats on their habitat have seen the crocodile population dwindle. The zoo regularly receives animals that were rescued from trafficking. Among those traits are tortoises, macaws, and monkeys.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The 2022 World Cup is reaching a fever pitch as hundreds of people line up at a shopping center in Qatar to take a picture with a trophy. The famous Golden World Cup trophy was unveiled during a ceremony at a mall in Doha, where excited football fans waited for their turn to see it. They were also given the option to take a selfie or have their photo taken professionally. While the competition is still nearly a year away, FIFA says more than a million tickets were requested within the first 24 hours after sales opened. The highest demand came from fans from Qatar, followed by Argentina, Mexico, and the United States, among others. Bangladesh is reviving the ancient tradition of producing a historically renowned fine hand-woven fabric called muslin. With the help of the government, the trade is making a comeback. Now, a workshop has been set up in Dhaka where weavers are being trained in the ancient art. They say it took them months to master the craft, working with incredibly fine hand-spun cotton yarns. The weavers say it takes them 8 hours to spin just 4 centimeters. Some varieties of the fabric are so fine that an entire muslin sari could fit inside a single matchbox.
There was a myth about muslin that it was so delicate that it would pass through even a small ring. Look, it's true. There is space to squeeze in another piece of cloth through this ring as well.
Breathing life back into this ancient trade was not easy. Officials with a revival project say there was little knowledge about how this fabric was made. Plus, the rare cotton variant, which makes this fabric so expensive, was also lost. The precious fabric was the most extravagant of its era and popular in Mughal courts. It was also imported into Europe for much of the 17th century and transformed the style of the aristocracy there.
An art gallery in London, Tate Modern, is hosting an exhibition with a remarkable span of surrealist works. The exhibition, dubbed Surrealism Beyond Borders, features more than 170 artworks ranging from paintings and sculptures to photography and films. Works by more than 150 artists from over 60 years are on the display. The exhibit also has a wide geographical span and includes surrealist artworks from different countries. Some of the most prominent artists whose works are being exhibited include Pablo Picasso, Salvador Dali, and Ted Jones. The exhibition will run until August 9th. Impressive, creative, wonderful. That's how visitors describe the works of Vincent Hoch, a Dutch post-impressionist painter being displayed in an impressive art exhibition in the Argentine capital. Hundreds of Van Hoch's paintings are projected onto the walls of the gallery. The image bloom and ripple in front of the audience, creating a 3D-like and immersive experience. Van Gogh was one of the most famous and influential figures in Western art history of the 19th century. He is largely remembered for his impressionist style, a break from the old traditional art technique. He is also famous for his turbulent life, which was made for outlandish, emotionally charged paintings.
Students and staff gather for sizzling meat sandwiches as they signal their orders with their hands at a food truck in Pakistan's capital city of Islamabad. The Abbey Cow is no ordinary food truck parked on the campus of the Millennium Universal College. It's fully managed and run by staff with hearing impairments. At the beginning of the queue, a diagram shows simple phrases in sign language which customers use to order their food and communicate. The food truck is Pakistan's first mobile restaurant entirely staffed by deaf workers, providing an economic opportunity for them.
Having the startup here at our campus has been really fruitful. Not only have we created more awareness around the sign language amongst our students, but we've also created an inspiration for TMUC students to look up and pursue entrepreneurship as a career choice.
The project developer, Aisha Raza, says the majority of deaf youth end up unemployed and face inequality and discrimination. She says she wanted to create an opportunity for her brothers to economically thrive. The goal is to bridge communication gaps between the deaf and hearing communities and help remove language barriers. The food truck is the brainchild of a family where both parents and their sons are either totally or partially deaf.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on RIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at a little controversial topic, which a lot of people ask. It's often brought up by non-Muslims regarding the Quran and also Islam in general. It's also tied up with, you know, a lot of modern-day misgivings regarding Islam and the Quran and Muslims as well. But the source of this misgiving and this objection is a verse of the Holy Quran, which we're going to recite for you today here on The Key. That verse is verse number 34 of Surah Nisa, which is the fourth surah of the Holy Quran. In this verse, God Almighty says, the part of the verse that's directly related to our topic at hand is this: وَاللَّاتِي تَخَافُونَ نُشُوزَهُنَّ فَإِزُوهُنَّ
وَهْجُرُوهُنَّ فِي الْمَوَاجِ وَضْرِبُوهُنَّ.
The translation of this verse goes as follows. As for those wives whose misconduct you fear, first advise them. And if ineffective, keep away from them in the bed. And as the last resort, beat them. Then, if they obey you, do not seek any course of action against them. A lot of people say that this verse propagates violence towards women, and it allows a man to beat his wife, which affirms the general idea that Islam is a violent religion, it's an anti-feminist religion, it's against women, it doesn't allow women the same rights as men, and so on and so forth. So the question we want to ask today is regarding this verse. We want to examine this verse, and inshallah, in some, probably we're going to be continuing this discussion in some of our forthcoming sessions. Right. So you looked at you heard the translation of the verse. Now let's examine the verse in general and see what exactly it says. First of all, in order to understand this verse, we need to understand a word that has been mentioned in the verse, which is nushuz. Wallati takhafuna nushuzuhunna. What does this word mean? This word basically, according to Quranic commentators, it refers to the idea that a woman would prevent her husband, would not allow her husband to, benefit from her in a physical manner, right? And to prevent him from establishing sexual relations with her husband. Right, so without any valid reason. We're not talking about the case where, Muslim, for example, the woman is sick or, you know, physically there's some ailment with her or is there some problem where she cannot freely allow her husband to enjoy sexual relations with her. But in the case where there is no other, there's no valid excuse, if such a woman prevents her husband from doing so, they call this nushuz. So therefore, this verse, it's specifically related to this case, and it's not related to, let's say, the case where a woman would disobey her husband as far as performing her other household duties, other household activities are concerned, such as cleaning the house, taking care of her kids, and so on and so forth. According to Islamic jurisprudence, a husband doesn't have any right over his wife. As far as these activities and responsibilities are concerned, and the wife is not religiously responsible to perform them, and if she denies the performance of them, her husband doesn't have any right upon her, and he cannot beat her from this point of view. Imam Raza alayhi salam said, وَالزَّرْبُ بِالسِّوَاكْ وَشِبْهِهِ زَرْبًا رَفِيقًا. The Imam said that this person should hit his wife with a siwak. A siwak is a small piece of wood, you know, and even bigger than a toothbrush, for example. And also the Imam adds that the act of hitting should be very, very lenient, and it shouldn't be very powerful. It shouldn't cause any kind of physical harm to the wife. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at violence against women and a right of a husband to beat his wife. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Shuma dar in qarn mo'jiza kardid. ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر خمینی رهبر.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello and welcome to our audience, and particularly a warm welcome to our regular listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World. This is a program dedicated to the life and times of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul. And I'm your host on this program, Ijaz Hussain. Once again, I'm joined by Dr. Mahdi Torabi to give his insight on the topic of the great Satan. I'd like to say salam to him and welcome him to the program.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Mahdi Torabi, the topic of the great Satan, this was a title that was given by Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, to the U.S. And it wasn't something that was given out of emotion, given out of any, shall we say, hatred towards the Americans. This was something that was mentioned as an indication of the nature and character of what the U.S. has become in terms of this imperialistic power that seeks hegemony throughout the world.
Right.
So, Dr. Mahdi Torabi, your take, because, of course, you know, the Islamic Republic of Iran has been at the brunt of, you know, hostility of the great Satan. And for a variety of reasons, principally because you got rid of its good friend, the Shah, here in Iran. And secondly, you, the students, overtook an embassy, I remember. A few months after the victory of the revolution.
I was very young at that time.
We were very young at that time and wish we had participated also in the overtake of that embassy, which was called the Den of Espionage, as I remember it. And I remember Jimmy Carter panicking on the television screens about, you know, the hostage crisis, wasn't it? You know, 444 days when this espionage staff was, you know, held here in Iran. And, of course, that led to a lot of tensions between the Islamic Republic and the great Satan, the USA. But your take since then and about, you know, the Imam's great insight and depth into in terms of giving, you know, this these kinds of terms for the U.S., because, of course, he wanted to make the Muslims understand that who is their real enemy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I think that's good what you said in terms of, you know, making people understand who the real enemy is.
Yes.
I think at that time, let's start it this way.
Yes.
Okay. Just as a matter of principle, obviously Imam, you know, was very calculating in terms of, he was very careful in what he said.
He was, yes.
He wasn't somebody who was given to, you know, And you can see the tapes and you can watch the films from back then.
When he said something, he meant it.
Right. Mm. He wasn't these people that would just, you know, come out with some statements.
One day, and then it'd be something else the next day.
Rhetorical flourishes while he's, you know.
Yeah,
he spoke quietly, calmly,
That's right.
And, you know, he was a man of 80. So, yes, he was. You know, he wasn't really going to get up and...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, do an imitation of Mussolini or whatever, you know, or Hitler in terms of, you know, astaghfirullah.
No.
So when he says something,
yes,
there's a basis for it.
There's a wisdom in it.
Right.
Yeah.
So why would Imam use the term great Satan?
Satan, yes. I mean, that was extraordinary at the time.
Right.
I mean, it took us all aback.
For the U.S.
Yes.
And I think really it has to do with, if you read the Quran,
yes,
and you are a little bit familiar with the way Shaitan
is
described in the Quran and in the Islamic sources,
sure,
you will see Shaitan is somebody who deceives, is somebody who tries to lead people astray.
Yes. And is also very arrogant.
Right.
There were qualities here that were being described.
I mean, this is before he, if you see the first time it's mentioned, which is Baqarah,
yes,
Surah Baqarah, when they, you know, it's the beginning of Surah Baqarah.
That's right.
When they talk about him not bowing down to Adam, Hazrat Adam.
Yes. Because he disobeyed Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Peace be upon him, in terms of, you know, Allah giving that order.
Order, yes.
That you should, you know, bow down to your...
And he became one of the mustakbirin, one of the
to the prophet and the imam of your age.
Yes, exactly. Well, there's a good point, isn't there? Yes.
And exactly. Mm. This is the point I was going to make, is that in the ayah, before it talks about him being kafir and denier of truth, he talks about him being mustakbir and takabbur and being arrogant.
Arrogant.
And remember, shaitan is a person who, or is a, you know, entity which... 6,000 years, according to the Rivayat, has been constantly praising and worshipping God.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, that's absolutely more than any of us.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
Yes.
6,000 years of...
It's more than a Glaswegian, because we only live till 50.
Exactly. So, you know, these are things that, you know, we should remember. Yes. When he says great Satan, he's talking about Satan and Shaitan coming from that Quranic Islamic background and that way of describing to us who Shaitan is.
Exactly.
It is a person who's arrogant. It is a person who disobeys the command of his Lord.
Sure.
It is a, you know, being that is so arrogant that it will not recognize the imam of its age.
Exactly.
And its job is to lead people astray.
Exactly.
This is because he asked God for, you know, once God decides that, you know, now that you've disobeyed, I'll have to take care of you. He says, well, give me time until the end of times.
Sure.
See how many people I can...
How much of the progeny of Adam I can destroy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And God says, okay.
Fine. Go ahead.
Let's see what you can do.
Do, yes. Exactly.
And of course, Allah also in the Quran, in many places, talks about the people who are mukhlisin. The people who are, you know, worshiping and praising Allah, you know, sincerely.
Yes.
They are immune to these.
To this entity.
Exactly. So it's not a, you know, some sort of a injustice by Allah to do this.
No.
In fact, Satan himself is a tool of Allah. And does it with the permission of Allah.
Exactly.
It's not like in the Christian way of, because this is the problem we have, is when we speak about religion in English, we immediately are using the words with that baggage that comes from Christianity. That's in terms of, you know, Satan having independent powers of God or being some sort of a dark force, you know.
Opposite to God. It's not like that.
There is no opposite to God.
No, there isn't. There's just God. Yes.
And everything happens within his plan. And part of his plan is to have Satan. An entity like the Satan. And we even have Shayateen talking about different Satans.
Yes, that's right. Different Satans, yes.
You know, we have Iblis,
yes,
which is, you know.
Yes. We also have our internal Satans as well.
So this the ayah that I was talking about is actually referring to Iblis.
Very good.
Which is, you know, the main Shaitan.
The arch Shaitan, yes.
Right?
As the U.S. is today.
Right.
Yes.
So this is the point that, you know, it's basically, and it's interesting. I think this is a very interesting subject to actually think about. You have, again, in the Quran, Shaitan talking about how, and the Quran describes it, how on the Day of Judgment, Shaitan will renounce all the people that he led astray. And he will say, all I did was obey my Lord.
Exactly.
So, you know.
That's right. Because he had his permission to do that in the first place. And then he says, well,
I'm not, you're not from me. I praise the Lord.
Yeah, that's right. And he said, well, they did that of their own free will. I mean, I had no power over them. I couldn't control them.
So, you know, Shaitan is a very interesting.
He is a very interesting character.
Right.
And not somebody I'd like to associate that.
Right. And I'm simply saying interesting in the sense that, you know, it's interesting to look at his place within this divine
plan.
Yeah, within this divine structure.
Yes.
So, given all that, this was all an introduction in terms of why would
Imam Khomeini, God bless his soul, use this term. Yes, right. Exactly.
It wasn't, as you correctly pointed out, simply a rhetorical flourish or some sort of emotional
response to something.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a very clear statement of the nature and the essence of who we're dealing with.
Dealing with, yes.
Okay. And I would add something to that, which is that a big part, or maybe the, and it's very interesting that we recently had this discussion again in the media. Americans, because of their Protestant background, because of their whole biblical way of looking at things, I'm talking about initially when America was
was started. You're quite right,
and
sir.
This coming out of Britain and coming out of the different dissident movements within the Protestant movements in England.
That's correct, yes.
They have this belief that they are chosen people.
They do. You know, it's pretty much interesting how that's in line
and this
with Israel.
This is something that's been discussed by academics, so this is not, I'm not saying anything new here.
No, you're not.
There's a whole set of literature on this matter that Protestants consider themselves to be the chosen people. That, you know, you had the Israelites and the Bani Israel initially, then you had, you know, the church. And then after the church, I'm talking about the Catholic Church.
That's right, yes. That's
and
right.
Once the Catholic Church went astray, then it was
the Protestants.
The burden fell onto the Protestants.
Yes, that's correct, yes.
To take on God's, you know.
I mean, this is very interesting because I've heard this a lot even in the UK, you know, that they do describe the US as being an apocalyptic nation in the sense that they're coming out of something right out of the Bible.
Well, what I was going to add is that once that aspect of things, in the 20th century where you have this kind of secularization happening, it becomes something else. It's called, they don't say we're chosen people anymore. They say we're the exceptional nation.
The exceptional nation.
Exceptionalism.
Yes, this is
exactly what Putin and Obama were arguing about. I don't know if you remember, Putin wrote the article.
Putin wasn't very happy about that
conversation.
And he
said, you know, we don't have exceptional nations.
No.
We all, you know, ask for forgiveness from the Lord. Okay?
Yes. And we all have to make do on this planet.
Right.
Yes.
And so basically, and this is a big debate within the U.S., one of the things that the Republicans and the conservatives criticized Obama for during the first round that he was running was when they asked Obama, is America an exceptional nation? He really didn't give a very, you know, patriotic answer to that. He said, well, we're exceptional just as other nations are exceptional in their own way. Mm. Gingrich had a whole book about it, how, you know, this shows that Obama is not really understanding what American civilization is and we are the exceptional nation.
Sure.
All that. This is, you know, in his first term. We get to the point in Syria where he basically, the only thing he could say about why they want to bomb Syria is, and this was in the press conference, the initial press conference that he announced that he was going to do this. He said, well, in the end, we're going to do this because we're America.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
You remember?
Yes, I remember.
We're America, and America has to do these things.
America has to do this.
Right. We are the only ones that can do this. We're the ones that have this responsibility.
Yeah.
Because we're an exceptional nation.
Ah.
We're different than the others.
Mm.
Okay?
Sure.
Now, when did Imam talk about this stuff?
Oh, my goodness. We are way back.
78?
Yes.
Yes?
I think so, 78, 79, yes.
Right. So, alhamdulillah, thank God, we see the world is coming to where Imam was
years ago.
When he says that it is the great Satan, it's more than saying you are not exceptional. It is saying that by you claiming to be the exceptional nation, claiming to be the chosen people, you are arrogating something for yourself.
Self, which you do not deserve.
And which is dangerous, leads people astray, which leads people into the fire, which leads to their destruction, which leads to your own destruction.
Your own self-destruction as well.
And
that's
as
right.
such, we have to stand up against you.
Exactly.
We cannot be indifferent to you.
No.
Okay? This is all, you know, and I think it's good that we're talking about these things at this moment because there's all this talk again about, you know, let's have a deal with the Americans. I'm talking about in terms of, you know,
Diplomacy and other things. Yeah, that's right. Yes.
And, you know, fine. Everybody does their diplomacy.
Sure.
You know, nobody's against diplomacy.
No.
You go, you talk, you
yes.
make your points.
And you agree to disagree.
And this is the beautiful thing that, you know, the leader always talks about, Supreme Leader always talks about, is that, you know the essence and the real identity of your enemy. This is, again, he's been talking about this in a number of speeches recently. Point. Where he says it's fine. He even used the term heroic flexibility, which was a very interesting way of saying it. He said, look, you know, we talk to everyone. He used the example of a wrestler, because you know Iranians were wrestlers.
We have a great tradition.
We beat everyone recently. We had the world championships.
You have. Yes.
We beat everyone again as usual.
As usual, yes.
We even had that meet in New York in Grand Central Station where they were invited, and we beat all the Americans in the wrestling. Okay, just for the record.
Just for the record.
Just for the record. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for
mentioning. So when the Supreme Leader uses wrestling analogies, this is something that is very, you know,
appropriate
in Iran. Everybody understands what he's talking about. And he was talking about that when a wrestler, you know, is in a clinch and is wrestling with his opponent, he might, you know, show some flexibility at times. He might let go of some area at some point, but he never forgets what he's doing.
Doing, yes.
He never forgets what the enemy is after.
After, yes.
So this is the point. I think when Imam, you know, so brilliantly and so powerfully
used this
word,
expression,
great yes. Satan, yes. he completely changed the framework in which people were looking at the United States.
Exactly.
He completely, you know, This is the great ability. This is the ability of great, you know, leaders.
Yes,
is they don't simply enter a debate; they actually shape the debate.
They shape it.
Okay, they determine the framework
parameters in
of the debate
of that debate. Yes,
his thing was not, well, you know, the Americans have been unjust to us for 50 years and they overthrew.
He said
they are the great Satan. This is our starting point.
He hit the nail on the head. That's our
starting
point.
Is you are the
great Satan. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is, we deal with you as the great Satan. Whatever we have to do, we do.
Mm.
And it's interesting because, you know, even Imam then in his final testament writes about the fact that, and this is, I think, one of those, I mean, it's just, you know, sometimes he says things and you think, okay, you know, where did this guy, like, where did he come from?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, he was just amazing, some of the things he would say.
No, he was beyond time in that sense.
He said in his final testament, he said, you know, maybe there will come a time when we can have relations with the United States if they change their attitude towards us. If they change their arrogance,
yes.
and they change their...
Right. He did say that.
So this is something that he's leaving the door. He's basically saying, yes, you are the great Satan, but it's because of your own behavior.
Yeah.
You can have an... And it's interesting. In that same sentence, he says, but we will never be friends with Ali Saud. This is very interesting. This was after they killed the
pilgrims in 1987. That's right. When they slaughtered the Hajj pilgrims in that year.
Right.
That's right.
So you know this is very to me
interesting.
This is interesting
very
because
interesting.
What you have is a is Imam basically saying this is the essence and this is the identity and this is the, you know, the characteristic
of the U.S.
of the U.S.
But you may be able to have some relations.
Listen,
with
this is the point about really understanding that, you know, it's all from Allah, right?
It is.
It's
very
not
much
something
so.
That you, you know.
No, you can do from yourself. No,
right.
No.
So we have him, you know, talking about the great Satan.
Yes.
Again, going back to the way we understand Shaitan in the Islamic sources.
Right.
And then, of course, looking at America's behavior globally.
Sure.
And isn't it interesting that these 34 years have just confirmed everything.
That's right. It's exposed America for what it is.
Isn't really America the most hated?
It is.
You know, in the nation in the world right now by other people.
Well, it's a gangster, isn't it?
Isn't it something?
It's like a large Al Capone.
And remember,
you know,
what
at
time Imam did this? Imam did this at a time when the U.S. was, you know, the great superpower.
Yes.
Standing up to the evil Soviets, to the godless communists.
That's right.
Right. So you know, America had a certain
image.
Right. They even
defenders of the free world.
They even, you know, had done what they did in Europe in World War II and standing up to the Nazis and standing up to, you know, the different forces that existed, which were all considered to be very good things by everybody. And and they are good things.
Yes.
Of course, it's good to stand up to, you know, a crazy person like Hitler.
Yes.
Okay. Of course, it's good to stand up to Stalinism. So these are things that, you know, America had on its, you know,
plus
resume.
Plus points. Resume. Yeah, it's a plus point on its resume.
Had on its CV.
Yeah.
with all the negative stuff as well, like, sure, you know, all the coup d'etats and the killings and the murders, yeah, in Latin America and around the world.
Yeah, the ones that they wouldn't speak about necessarily.
Right,
yes.
So before World War II, all the stuff that they did in the world, they already were practicing in Latin America, so sure, since the Monroe Doctrine, you know, yes, started. So this was, so it's not, we're not trying to say that it was all good or all bad, but yeah, there was, there were elements.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, we see, you know, the first time the U.S. is seriously challenged in the Cold War.
Sure.
By a so-called third world nation, by a developing nation, is the Islamic Revolution.
Sure.
And, you know, isn't it beautiful that at that time, you know, it was, you know, we're neither West nor East, we're Islamic Republic.
Republic, yes.
So it wasn't like every other situation in the Cold War where if we were going, if you were going to go against the U.S., you would necessarily
join
be with
the Soviet
bloc.
Yes, that's
okay?
right.
Or if you were with the Soviet Union, you were necessarily against the U.S. This is the kind of world that the Americans and the Soviets wanted.
Exactly.
And they had created to.
But Iran broke out of that
Iran
because of
broke
Islam.
Out of that complete mold, and that's why you see that.
Thanks to Imam Khomeini, God
that's why
the
you
soul.
See the Americans and the Soviets supporting Saddam during
exactly,
the war.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. They're giving him weapons, and all of everybody's supporting Saddam.
They had to contain this because
right?
this,
so
was,
this
a,
was like one,
a very dangerous idea.
Right. I mean, this was like. You know, the
this
Soviets
was toxic.
And Soviets and the Americans, hey, we need to be on this. We are together on, this,
on
one.
This one.
Which is, you know, just think about that for
yeah,
a second.
Yeah, I know. It was extraordinary.
And so basically what you had, and it's funny because at that time they said, well, the Soviets are the little Satan.
Okay? Yes, that's right. They're the little Satan.
Yes. We forgot about that.
Yeah, we forgot about that.
Because the Soviets don't exist anymore. So,
yes,
you know,
that's
it doesn't
right.
matter.
So. Yeah, so that's why he was little because he was, he was going to resign pretty
so
soon.
So this is, there's also a point in that, which is that the main enemy
is going to be the U.S.
Right. Mm. So it is in this environment that, you know, our dear Imam said these things.
Sure.
He framed the debate. He called out the U.S. and, you know, pointed out to the real identity of the U.S. and its behavior towards others.
Sure.
Again, I repeat, when Imam talks about the great Satan, he's talking about something that's also partly in the control of the U.S. of how it behaves.
Sure.
This is not some sort of a, you know, preordained, you know.
No, it's not, no.
Where there's no influence.
Because that's very interesting that you're saying that.
Because that's not part of Islam.
Yeah, because
everyone is capable of redemption.
Everybody, changing their behavior,
right.
That's right. So he says that if they can change their conduct, there may be some room for negotiation.
Right. Yeah. So the point is, again, the beautiful thing that he did is that from an Islamic perspective, he clearly drew the line.
Yes, he did.
Because we see, brother, Look at how miserably Ikhwan failed in Egypt.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Why?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
they didn't understand
I mean,
who America was.
Exactly.
Okay?
Yeah.
So this is important Islamically.
That's right.
Okay? I'm talking now Islamically. We'll
yes,
go
because
step by step.
They made a fundamental mistake in their revolution completely.
What we saw, unfortunately, in these last years is that the Ikhwan, you know, didn't understand the nature of America.
No.
They thought that well we got the population to vote for us so we'll play everyone.
Yes.
We'll deal with the Americans, we'll keep our ambassador in Israel, we'll try to, you know, be friendly with the Americans.
Yeah, try to be everything to all things.
Right.
And it all went pear-shaped.
Exactly. Why? Because from the beginning they were not able to distinguish the reality and the identity and the essence of
Who is your enemy?
Who the other side is.
Yes.
What the enemy is.
Yes, sir.
Something which was very important and completely different when it came to the Islamic Revolution in Iran because of the leadership of somebody like Imam.
Yes.
And it's always Imam standing there when everybody is confused.
Yes.
And everybody's
not so sure about what
to do. What were we supposed to do? Imam saying, this is it. And he was always right.
He was always right.
And this is a miracle.
This is extraordinary. Really, this is.
I mean,
the,
you know, I'm not
this,
trying to.
No,
know,
no.
I mean, he's not Masoom. He's a normal human being.
We've said that in a previous program. You've said that in a previous program, which was a very appropriate thing that you said at the time, and a very excellent point, where you said that no, this comes naturally out of the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt.
Exactly.
This is something expected of us.
And
if,
again,
if we follow
repeat,
it properly, that's
that
the conclusion we'd come to.
I repeat that beautiful sentence or that phrase by Shahid Sadr.
Yes, please.
You know, Ayatollah Muhammad Baghir
Sadr, yes,
who was martyred by, you know,
Saddam, yes,
crazy Saddam,
yes,
where he tells his students, he says, you know, lubu, which is, you know, how would you melt into Imam,
yes,
become one with Imam,
Mom,
the way Imam has melted into has become one with Islam.
My God.
Okay.
What
so
a beautiful
is,
expression.
Right. So he's, the Imam is completely, you know, manifestation of all those teachings,
Marshall.
Both in terms of the knowledge and in terms of acting on it.
Acting on it.
Yes. He's a manifestation of that.
He was the manifestation.
You know,
of
it's
that.
Interesting because we always use the word Ayatollah. He really is Ayatollah.
He was really Ayatollah. He was.
Because he was a sign of God.
There were books I remember that came out in the UK, you know, and it simply said the sign of God. Right. And there was a big portrait of Imam Khomeini. There you are. Right.
So he really was Ayatollah.
Because we use Ayatollah
in terms of a title.
Yes, but he was really the Ayatollah.
But then we really have Ayatollah. And of course, all of us are Ayatollah in a certain way.
We are, but
the whole of creation is Ayatollah.
Yeah, but we're not.
But you know, he was
right. Yeah.
And, you know, this is good for us to have experience because, you know, we're distant from the time of the Prophet.
Yes.
You know, when you're in the presence of a prophet or the imams, it's clear.
It's very, very clear.
I mean, it wasn't clear to everyone, but...
No. Of course, you know? I know. There were certain exceptions in those cases.
We don't want to get into that.
We don't want to get to that.
But the point is that, you know, that presence already itself is maybe the biggest proof for a lot of people.
It is.
Just the presence of the prophet, peace be upon him.
Yes.
Or people like Imam Ali alayhi salam or the other imams that were there. So... Yes. And you know, we're removed from that era.
Mm.
And yet we see somebody, at least for me, this was the case, I'm sure it was for you.
So yes, it
those
was.
Of us
it
who,
certainly
who,
was, sir.
Who experienced yes. Imam.
Thank God.
You know, thank yes. God we lived to see him.
See that, yes. Because really we were very, very distant from any understanding of religion or God or even our purpose in life. And to be honest, you know, this man, you know, I mean, we don't want to use words like miracle and things like, because that's not what we're saying. We're really saying that, no, because he was living on the true teachings of Islam, he made us see what Islam
right.
is.
Right, and it was beyond, it was immediate, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was existential, it was immediate.
It was immediate, yes.
It wasn't something that...
It spoke to your soul.
It wasn't indirect, it was direct.
It was direct.
It wasn't something that was mediated, when I'm using the word immediate.
No,
it wasn't mediated.
No. Certainly, in Glasgow, you can't get that. It really touched your soul.
Right.
It did.
It wasn't something, you know, planned or sometimes, you know, staged.
Yes.
It was genuine.
It was genuine.
It was real. You could really feel that this is coming from, you know, the source.
The source, yes. the real source, the original source.
When he would say the words, you knew that this is what was in his heart. It wasn't, you know, some sort of artistic or...
No, I mean, the thing is, the media at the time, and, you know, the UK media is one of the most vicious, one of the most...
Right. The most vicious.
Nefarious type of media there is. But even they hung on every word that the Ayatollah had to say.
Right.
It was like, you know, what is he going to say the next day? They were even having trying to anticipate that, you know, exactly what he was going to say.
And remember, we quoted from the book that we're using.
Yes,
we talked about, you know, the big crime or the big sin of Imam was that, and as the Telegraph, I think it was the Telegraph. It was the Times.
The Times
talking about
Times,
you know
right.
he actually dared to tell people that they can stand up to the Americans and they have power.
People have power. Yes.
So imagine this is a society in which, you know, you have mass illiteracy, you have basically a feudal system.
Sure.
You have people who have very little feeling of empowerment.
Sure.
And here comes a man and he completely empowers them. And the great world power, again, I'm using the word power on purpose.
Yes.
So you have, you know, a taking away of the power of America and that image and calling it the great city and giving power to people who otherwise would be considered, you know, the lowest of the lowest.
Well, I mean, I think on that note, we can end this program by saying that Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, never said anything without wisdom.
Exactly.
Number one. And number two, because of the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. And number two, this empowerment of the people. I mean, this was something the Imam deeply held in his heart, that he believed that civil disobedience, peaceful civil disobedience, was the way to bring down imperial powers.
And it did.
And that formula works today.
And it did.
It did.
And what you do first is you actually point out the reality of who you're dealing with.
Exactly.
And this is what he did.
Yes, and point out the true nature of your enemy. Thank you very much. And on that note, it just leaves me to thank our listeners for listening to our program today. And it leaves me to say, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Oh, you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shimanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, March 13th, 2022. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, the great listeners of IRIB English Radio, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Do remember, Listeners Special is your own program. It's your views that are important. Please tell us your views about our broadcast in this program. Stay tuned for more. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special. This is your program. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. Yes, these reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. You know why? Because these reception reports actually enable us to provide a high quality service, a better service to our great listeners around the world. And all of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an eQSL card from us, an electronic QSL card from us as a confirmation. So here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Bashir Ahmed from Bangladesh, Maria Garcia, Benito from Ireland, and Ralph Ladush from Germany. Many thanks for sending us these reception reports, Ralph, Mario, and Bashir Ahmed. And here, I do express my appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails and letters and pictures from around the world, including we have an email from Ramin Aminizad from Iran. That's great. Alexandra Bogdanova from Slovakia, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email from Germany. Ralph Ladouche has sent us an email from Australia. You can't believe we've received a letter from Paul Simmons, and Paul has attached many photos of the animals native to Australia, and they're so beautiful. Thank you, Paul. And also, we've received a handwritten letter from the UK. This email is from Grant Skinner from England. Many thanks for sending us these great emails from around the world. So after a short break, I will be back with these emails and I will read them. So stay with me. Welcome back. So we've received an email from Iran. Yes, it's an email from an Iranian listener from Ramin Aminizad. So let's see what Ramin says. Dear staff, since IRIB English Radio is the only convenient way for me to learn English, may I hereby ask your producer to add teaching a Persian to English proverb once a week, at least if it is possible, please? Thank you in advance. Salam and warm greetings to you, Ramin, from Iran. Thank you very much for sending us this email, and thank you for telling us such a suggestion. So I will, of course, I will inform our producer to see if it's possible to learn a Persian to English proverb in our programs in IRIB English Radio. Thank you anyway, Ramin Aminizad from Iran. My colleagues will send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. And from Slovakia, we've received an email from Alexandra Bogdanova, one of our regular listeners. So, Alexandra says, greetings. Thank you very much for contacting me and acknowledging my reports. It's very much appreciated. I personally like the broadcast by the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. They are very professional and informative, in my opinion. It's nice to hear about things that are currently happening in Iran and its neighboring countries. Personally, I would very much appreciate if you could add more programs or talk more about local things such as culture, music, food, and history and politics. The signal is mostly very weak in Central Europe, hard to receive, and sometimes it's not so audible and understandable. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Alexandra Bogdanova from Slovakia. Please accept our warm greetings and thanks. Thank you very much for sending us this email. It was very informative. Thank you very much for telling us your views about IRIB English Radio programs and the quality of the programs and the signals. We are so happy that the signals of IRIB English Radio are received in your region. However, you said the signal is mostly very weak in Central Europe and it's hard to receive and sometimes it's not so audible and understandable. Alexandra Bogdanova from Slovakia, I will inform my colleagues about this trouble, and for the times that it's hard to receive and it's hard to understand and it's not audible, you can refer to our website. And there you can have the live and online broadcasting of IRIB English Radio programs. You can refer to this address, www.parstoday.com/en. Anyway, I will inform my colleagues about this program. Maybe they can fix it. And many thanks for your actually compliments. As you said, you found the programs of IRIB English Radio very professional and informative. Thank you for that. So here you have a very nice suggestion. You said you like IRIB English Radio add more programs or talks about local things of Iran, such as culture, music, food, and history. And okay, I will tell our producers to think about this idea. And of course, we try to produce more programs about the culture, music, food, and history of Iran. Anyway, Alexandra Bogdanova, many thanks for